This is titled Open Letter, written by Z. Charneau, July 30th, 1994. 27 years ago this month, I began publicly reporting a transformation in my life, a body of learning and insight to which I was opened, an understanding to which I was guided and inspired. Only the consistency and stamina of the effort over these years gives an indication of its validity. My clumsiness, poor judgment, weakness, and frailty at times has distracted. A very small portion of what Jesus was and what he taught has been allowed, admitted, and disclosed by institutional Christianity. No level of reformation is adequate to improve upon the deficiency of the body of literature reporting so little of what Jesus was and what he taught. We are indebted to Buddhists and Gnostics for the larger body of literature which reports more comprehensively who Jesus was and what he taught. In Ladakh, in Tibet, at the monastery at Hemis, an account of the 18 years of Jesus' life between ages 12 and 30 are found. We are indebted to such as Notovitch and Rorick for an awareness of this information. Only recently we have gained access to the Nag Hammadi Gnostic literature. Very recently the Dead Sea Scrolls have been loosened from the control of those who traditionally attempt to own truth. They try to manipulate and to control truth they don't understand. We can be thankful for a few who shunt past this manipulation and control and who offer direct accounts of the greater body of knowledge about what life is, what it is for, and what the opportunity and responsibility of life means. At the end of the 19th century, Spalding reported the life and teachings of the masters of the Far East. Levi Dowling presented the Aquarian Gospel. In the 20th century, Edgar Cayce and Ruth Montgomery used invisible sources to expand upon that body of knowledge. Jane Roberts and Robert Butts vastly supplemented this information. There is a kind and a degree of consistency in the body of knowledge described in the foregoing. It fits together with the accounts of Blofeld and Alexandra David Neal of the Tibetan traditions. Yogananda and Yukteswar provide East Indian profundity on self-realization and holy science. Carlos Castaneda reports the traditions of the Mayans, more particularly the Yaqui preservers of the Mayan tradition. Jose Arguelles and Humbert's men explain more. It all fits together. Krishnamurti and Alan Watts have contributed. Zen, EQ's freedom, and Suzuki's scholarship indicate methods of liberation. From another body of literature, we can benefit from the raw material, the Andreessen Affair, and its follow-up, the Andreessen Affair Phase 2, and the Watchers 1 and 2. From the life sciences, we can valuably consult the works of Edmund Sinnett, Lyle Watson, Rupert Sheldrake, and be guided in the right direction. We can use the methods of Robert Munro and Hemisink. This grants another method of self-validating exploration, like Zen and other meditational techniques. With this abundance of sources, orientations, directions, even taken collectively, we can extricate ourselves from an attachment to the partial and prepare ourselves for a connection to the whole. Nowhere in this most valuable body of knowledge do we find some fundamental principles. The Vedas, Hindu scriptures, tell us that in creation, God, Brahman, abstained from himself in a great fervor. But what was the hope of creation? God is all that is. There was a kind and a degree of oneness prior to the creation. Creation generates a possibility generating delay in consequences. Free will is generated by the delay in consequences. Space and time are obstructions in the flow of consequences which generate this delay. The delay in consequences doesn't mean there are no consequences. In the 5th century, institutional Christianity legislated reincarnation out of its teaching. In the mid-19th century, Orthodox Judaism did the same. The only one life theme became further exaggerated by science and its knowledge claims of mechanistic materialism. So, we in the 20th century reap the consequences of much institutional authority in religion and science, and find ourselves confronting hopeless, desperate, and destructive forces who believe there are no consequences because there is a delay in consequences. Science has guided us to derive our beliefs from our experience. This dictum neglects the understanding that belief is what we presume to be true for the sake of our exploratory and experimental behavior. Post-exploratory or post-experiential knowledge is not a substitute for hypothesis or provisional belief. We do not eliminate the need for belief by quest for certainty. Always within the realm of what we don't know, we require hypothesis. Humility must be sufficient to not exaggerate knowledge claims so as to exclude what we don't know, and require hypothesis to explore or to experiment. In the quest for certainty, we seek proof. Proof, however, can only be gained by closing off the tributary forces and influences. We may enjoy the method of isolating and defining our experiment, but that may mean we simply ignore some forces or influences. We haven't really isolated anything. This is especially true when we consider that everything in the manifest universe is only charges in motion and their related magnetic fields. The motion of a charge always has a correlated magnetic field, and a magnetic field always provokes the motion of a charge.